You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Rod Oram this morning. Kia ora, Rod. How are you?
Kia ora, Rachel. Very well, thank you.
Crikey, it's been a big week in politics. Michael Wood has resigned, and this has been quite the upset. Can you explain what's actually happened? We've obviously heard a lot about the airport shares, but can you tell us a wee bit about what's come out in the last, 48 hours, that has really prompted this action?
I think from the Prime Minister's point of view, the most important thing is that Wood had lied to him, and they've known each other for a very long time. A couple of decades or so, being grown up in politics. And I think that must have been severely undermining in terms of his relationship with Wood. What's gone on is that it wasn't just about airport shares. It turns out that Wood had shareholdings in Chorus, Spark, National Australia Bank, and the like. And there were some very direct conflicts. So, for example, Chorus, the telecommunications company, there were representations from the telecommunications industry, including Chorus, seeking changes to the green list to add more telecommunication technicians to the immigration, incoming immigration people. And that's, a clear conflict of interest. But what completely puzzles me is that whilst that has some benefit to Chorus, the personal financial gain that Wood have got from that would be minuscule, because I haven't looked at the share price, but it can't have bounced much. But even if it was a big bounce, he's got so few shares, it would be meaningless. So I think there's a strange psychology to be delved into here about why Wood has behaved this way over his shareholdings. And we were talking some tens of thousands of dollars. They're not by any means huge sums.
Mm.
And so I think it's now become very damaging to his career. When it was just about the airport shares and he kept putting that off, that's one thing. But I think this seriously, seriously calls into his judgment, under scrutiny. And So I'm reluctant to make this prediction because in many ways he's been a good minister, but I'm not sure he can come back from this.
Mm. It's a very frustrating thing. There has been a lot of commentary about this in the last 24 hours that he was pushing quite a lot of very successful policy through, doing a lot of really good changes in spaces around immigration and refugee support. And there's been a lot of frustration from people that this is seems like a very silly sword to die on.
Ridiculously so, which is, I hate to say this in many respects, I think there's a curious psychological thing going on here as to why he felt so determined to hang on to these shares, even though there was no plausible financial gain of any serious amount there, whatever he did. And I just think that's really, really weird, which is why I think it really calls into serious doubt his judgment. And as I say, it is a great shame. In terms of people who we've seen grow into the job of being ministers over the last couple of terms of government, he's been good. He's on top of policy. He seems to be very comfortable in the job and got some useful things done. So he is a real loss to the government. As I say, I've never come across a situation quite like this, where somebody has done something that's really hard to explain.
One thing that's come out of this is we've also heard Chris Hipkins saying that there's going to be quite a look into how conflicts of interest are managed and declared as well in government. Do you think this is a good thing that we're seeing come out of a strange situation?
Yes, but I always thought it was incredibly clear. More clarity, fine. But everybody else seemed to be able to live by it perfectly well, but Wood didn't. And, we keep coming back to him and his personality and what was driving him in this. And at one level, there's not much point in trying to get to the bottom of that. because, as I say, I think his career is seriously damaged, and I'm not sure he can come back from it. His political career is seriously damaged.
In terms of an election year, do you think this is going to be damaging for the Labour Party leading up to the polls?
Well, it's been a bit of a string of ministers, you know, people like Nash ahead of him. So it's been a very tough 5 months for Hipkins as Prime Minister, having to deal with these. It now looks like a pattern, and that's going to be, whilst it's not deeply corrosive to the effectiveness or the credibility of government, it definitely chips away at it, and it certainly gives the opposition plenty to keep reminding voters about how a Labour-led government has behaved through this.
Speaking of the opposition, let's talk about National's emissions policy, which you've written. We spoke about this a little bit last week, but you've written a really passionate piece for Newsroom about this, Rod, pretty strongly against this. What's your main concern with what National has proposed? Why do you think this is not a strong policy?
Oh dear, I was hoping the column was deeply clinical and so well argued that nobody could refute it, rather than just passionate. It is so fundamentally wrong for so many reasons. There is no acknowledgement in there about what on earth's happening to land use change, farming, food production and the like, because around the world, because in aggregate, those are the largest single drivers of climate change. And so there's huge change underway. Mm. And there is just no sense of that, no understanding of it. I'm not even sure they've been reading about it in this policy document. So that's at the very high level. But secondly, it is also fundamentally a misleading document because it says nothing about what farmers are actually doing now and could be incentivized to do more of with very little sums of money, but encouraged to keep doing what they're doing to reduce emissions. Mm. It's just hanging out for this unproven technological bonanza that National think is there in terms of methane inhibitors and vaccines. But then that flies completely in the face of what we trade on, the purity and naturalness of our food. So are we really going to say to our customers overseas, oh, would you like a nice lamb rack of lamb, and would you like some chemicals with that? Because that's exactly what's going on here. And again, with their biotechnology policy proposals, there's a lot of merit in them, but there's not a word in there about having to go cautiously on this because of New Zealand's reputation that we trade on, we make money on. And so I think these are all blind sides, and it just panders to the worst of farmers. The best of farmers are working on this. Synlait Milk and Silver Fern Farms are already working under science-based target initiatives, the gold standard of corporate climate responses globally. And Fonterra isn't, we'll say that again for another day. And so that's how fundamentally wrong the whole policy is.
Mm.
And it could have been written by Federated Farmers. And as it happens, the person who was, until last year, head of Luxon's policy and research team has gone back. He had come from Federated Farmers. He's gone back to Federated Farmers to be their GM policy and advocacy. So it's just all far, far too close to just giving the very misguided power for people in the farming sector the very things that they don't need and to respond to climate and would be very damaging if a government gave them.
Mm. Just very briefly, Rod, what does the policy of major parties in Aotearoa, particularly Labour, National, the Greens, what does that look like when we compare it to counterparts overseas at the moment? What are we seeing that's similar or different, or well, what's your take on that?
By and large, I'm afraid the politics of this remains very difficult around the world. But a couple of standouts, Biden on his wonderfully named Inflation Reduction Act, and there were some things in that did actually reduce inflation, but was actually about green energy, is one example of a big step change to the positive. But the most interesting one is Keir Starmer, the Labour leader, delivered a speech earlier this week, which is very, very committed on a whole bunch of major climate issues for big action as the next government. So, but crucially, it's the first time I've seen the leader of a political party talk about green prosperity, i.e. if you do these things, you just don't, you know, make life more comfortable because you don't get as much climate change.
Mm-hmm.
You actually get a better economy. And, of course, the UK economy is so getting so bombed out and hollowed out post-Brexit that they're starting to cast around for what they might do differently. So there's going to be, I think, quite a... an engaged audience for this. And this was only the first of a number of proposals coming from Labour. And it was very good to see that level of ambition. But that's rare, I have to say.
Yeah, and interesting to hear an ambitious policy from UK Labour as well, I have to say, too. So very, very interesting to follow that. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Rod. It's always awesome to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks, and I would really recommend people who want to find out more about your thoughts on National's emission policy regional newsroom piece. We'll link it in the podcast after the show. Thanks so much. Have a great morning.
Thank you. You too. See ya. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.